welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Tony Pialis. Tony co-founded AlphaWave in 2017 and has since served as its president and chief executive officer. Tony has extensive experience as an entrepreneur in the semiconductor industry, having co-founded three semiconductor IP companies, including Snowbush Microelectronics, which was sold in 2007 and is currently part of Rambus. Tony also founded V Semiconductor, which was acquired by Intel in 2012, and Tony served as vice president of analog and mixed signal IP at Intel between 2012 and 2017. Welcome, Tony.
Thanks, Daniel. Great to be here. I look forward to spending the next while with you and chatting.
Yeah, I mean, we've met before. It's just great to catch up. So, Tony, let's start with what brought you to semiconductors.
Wow. So I'll think back 25 years. That's about the time period that I've been in semis. I took electrical engineering at University of Toronto, both undergraduate and graduate school. You know, my favorite areas were always physics. And one of the, I think, key drivers in my career, early career was that University of Toronto offered an internship period separating third and fourth year. I took advantage of that. You know, one reason was just to replenish my finances to help me pay for my fourth year of college. The other was to just see how I'd enjoy, you know, joining the workforce. And I was lucky enough to have gotten an internship at ATI Technologies, which was later acquired by AMD. And so that was my real first foray into semiconductors. Immediately, I loved it. I loved the combination of mathematics with circuits, with problem solving, with coding. It really brought a lot of the coursework that we had done in undergrad together and applied it in one spot. So I immediately became passionate on it. I finished up undergrad as quickly as possible and focused my graduate studies on semiconductors. And then there's been no looking back since.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of internships. I did one as well. And, you know, my focus was software engineering. But after my internship, I changed to hardware because back then in the early 80s, there were many more hardware jobs than software. I mean, now today, it would be quite the opposite. But it gave me a pretty good view of the industry, which was quite a contrast between what was going on in the universities at the time anyway, you know, in Silicon Valley. So.
And picking up on your thread, I'd say up to about a year ago, you know, the trend was clearly it's all about software, because I still go back to the University of Toronto and occasionally guest lecture. And it's amazing, Dan, when I talk about semiconductors, you know, most of the undergrad students think semiconductors consist of FPGAs. That's all they know. Right. So there certainly has been a lot of lack of focus on hardware, specifically semis. I do think this chip shortage that the industry is experiencing right now has created a lot more press and has brought the importance of us hardware guys to the forefront. So I'm hoping it'll help drive a renaissance of sorts to you know, make semis, make hardware design a bigger market for the next generation of graduates.
Yeah, that's definitely the upside of all the press we've gotten about the shortages and such. So I agree. And I think you'll see a kind of a bubble in engineering schools after this. So I'm really looking forward to it because, you know, we have to have the workforce. We have to have the engineering support from the universities to be successful. But semiconductors are sexy again. It's kind of good.
It's like fashion. Things just go in and out of style, but they never disappear.
Yeah. So, you know, you've done three semiconductor IP companies. You know, after your experience from the second one, why did you start AlphaWave?
So if you ask my wife, when I left Intel, I promised her I was done. Okay, I wouldn't do another startup again. My idea was to take a break and to, you know, figure out what new challenges I would get into. However, I think it was December of 2016. I met an old friend, and he was a customer of mine twice, a gentleman by the name of John Holt. I met him for dinner in Tribeca in December of 2016, and we started chatting. He was also at a juncture in his career where he was looking for the next great thing to do. And over dinner, we started talking about the industry and mega trends in the industry, and what we wanted to do. And what we quickly realized was that there was a tremendous amount of focus on compute, lots of investment, lots of startups, lots of innovation in that space. And one thing that we had clearly learned in both of our careers was that wherever there's high performance compute, you need high performance connectivity. And that was the inspiration, right? The industry needed a robust IP supplier of high performance compute to enable the next generation of server products, of networking products, of data center products, of cloud compute. And it was ultimately from that dinner that wheels started rolling. I made my transition out of Intel, and I made a commitment from that point on, where my two previous companies were ultimately acquired, that here, this time around at AlphaWave, we would do something far more significant. And what I wanted to do was really leave a deep imprint on the industry that had been so generous to me throughout my career. And the goal of AlphaWave was, and still is, to grow a dominant semiconductor provider, whether it's an IP or chiplet format, that will be both a public company, a multi-billion, 10 plus billion dollar company, and really help drive the industry moving forward in terms of solving connectivity challenges.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about that. What problems are AlphaWave trying to solve specifically?
So the technical innovation that I think has allowed us to so quickly break into the industry and move into the forefront of the industry is that as more communication needs to happen, whether it's the deployment of 5G networks, whether it's faster CPU rates, more edge devices all converging back into data centers and base stations. Ultimately, the rate of information that needs to be exchanged and the volume of information is increasing, and that's creating bottlenecks, and it's creating bottlenecks in data centers. And the so that means we need to transmit data more quickly. The media that we use for transmitting data, whether it's electrical, whether it's optical, really hit an inflection point when speeds hit 56 gig. There was a traditional analog approach for building communications interfaces that worked very well throughout my career. When I started, interface rates were in the 300 megahertz range. Now, they're in 100 gigabit plus. So they've increased probably 300x over 20 years. The traditional approaches worked well up to 56 gig, and then they hit a ceiling. And I physically hit that ceiling while I was at Intel. The way we used to do things just wasn't scaling robustly to get designs into production. And that, when we started AlphaWave, became a catalyst for bringing an alternate approach for building these types of networking interfaces. And so the same way satellite radio replaced AM and FM radio, we developed a innovative DSP-based approach that eliminated and alleviated all of the challenges that the analog predecessors had encountered when the industry went to 56 gig. And so we embraced this DSP-based approach. We innovated it. We developed a vast portfolio of technologies all based on that same concept. And we've successfully brought them to market since.
That's an excellent explanation. But you know, this is a little bit of a crowded field. What is your competitive positioning like?
Sure. It's this DSP-based focus that has allowed us to differentiate. We leverage DSP far more than anyone else in the industry. We don't rely on robust analog ADCs or DACs, which is virtually where the rest of the industry is. What we've done is we allow transistors to vary. And as you move to smaller geometries like 5 nanometer and 3 nanometer, they vary much more than they ever have. I remember when I was at Intel, walking through the fab, talking to the PhDs running the fabs, one senior lead told me these days, building transistors is literally stacking atoms. And that, you know, it's that challenge that leads to all this difficulty in terms of building precision, high performance, high speed analog. And so rather than try to build high performance, high speed analog, we can live with lower performance, higher variability in analog. And then we've developed very innovative approaches to compensate for that using digital techniques, techniques that have historically been used in radios, techniques that have historically been used in other applications. We've just taken those techniques, sped them up by over 100 times because we're running faster than any of these other interfaces ever have. And we've slashed the power by more than 100 times in order to allow our customers to be able to integrate hundreds of interfaces within a single monolithic die.
Oh, that's amazing. So let's talk about your IPO. I mean, congratulations. You know, I've been through the IPO process twice, and my wife also told me never, never again, because it is quite an exhilarating but also a frightening experience. So, you know, share your IPO experience. What happened?
So for me, it was a completely exhilarating experience. It really brings the company and its accomplishments to the forefront. So that was remarkable. It's something I've never done before. As I've mentioned, the previous businesses I founded were all successfully acquired. So I was relatively new in the space. And you know, it goes even further. All of my previous businesses were all founder funded. We had never accepted any traditional VC money, only a small handful of strategics. So I, you know, this was relatively new for me. What made our IPO experience even more interesting was that we did it during COVID. So not only were we able to meet a broad investor base, an international investor base, but we experienced it 100% virtually. So we began the IPO process in October of 2020, while everything was still in lockdown. And we successfully went public in early Q2 of 2021. And so we did early roadshows. We did our formal IPO roadshow. All of our work streams with the banks, with attorneys, it was 100% virtually. There were people that I've probably spent hundreds of hours with working through this IPO, whether they were our bankers or whether they were our attorneys, that I've never met in person. It was even more surreal on the morning that our stock first listed. I experienced that at home. We did a virtual ringing of the bell on the London Stock Exchange. So it was certainly a wonderful experience, but no one could have imagined, having to do it virtually, where traditionally there would have been a lot more travel and a lot less efficiency under normal circumstances.
Oh, that's an amazing story. That's going to be one of a kind. You know, there weren't too many IPOs during COVID, but that's just incredible.
I think our industry, again, now's a really good period. As I mentioned previously, with this focus on semiconductors, frankly speaking, I never thought this level of interest from the investment community in semiconductors would ever come back after the 2000 tech bubble burst. But we're popular again. It's not just the social media and the software companies. And so it was wonderful through the roadshow. And even now, as I continue to meet with investors and analysts, the level of interest and the appreciation of the value that semiconductors bring. And so this has been extremely enjoyable to be able to talk about the great work we're doing and to have others recognize that value and reward it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we've seen on SemiWiki, you know, we've been around for 10 years and, you know, more than 4 million people have visited our site. The reader base has changed from, you know, the fabless guys and the IDMs to the systems guys. So systems companies are now the bulk of our readership. And, you know, they're creating their own chips rather than buying them. And they're not necessarily creating their own IP, right, at least up front. So it's huge. Burst to the it's a huge amount of momentum to the IP business. So, you know, how much of your IP customers, how many of them are system companies versus chip companies? You know, what is the mix you're seeing?
Dana, you hit the nail on the head in terms of major industry trends. Even traditional cloud companies or hyperscalers that you would think are software-based companies, in order to optimize their clouds, in order to optimize their networks, they're not able to just buy ASSPs, right? You know, standard parts off the shelf. They're now investing into their own servers, their own machine learning or AI in order to give them differentiation in terms of the services they offer. So in terms of our customer base, yeah, it's a diverse customer base of what you would traditionally imagine in terms of standard semiconductor companies, but we're also working with North American, European, and Asian cloud and hyperscalers that, as you've described, are now building their own hardware. And so this trend is only accelerating because when you look at companies that can build leading edge semis on leading edge nodes, you know, the costs are hundreds of millions approaching a billion, and there's not hundreds of companies anymore that can afford that. And so the tens to 100 plus companies that can't afford it, well, a lot of them are hyperscalers, and they're leveraging their capital and their market caps to further optimize their offerings, and that goes all the way down to the semiconductors they use.
Yeah, some of those guys, I work with a couple of them, they write some really big checks. I mean, they're really not concerned about budgets. They're concerned about, can I get this chip done to these specs in this amount of time? You know, because they're not selling chips, right? They're using them internally, so they're able to make, you know, huge amounts of money off these chips rather than just, you know, a tight margin on the fabless market. So I think it's a big game changer. It's one of the reasons why we're doing so well. So what do you see in the future for AlphaWave? You know, I mean, I do acquisitions, you know, during the day and mostly EDA. And I tell you, I've never seen a more acquisition rich environment. And again, you know, part of it is because people are spending more money in the EDA and IP business. There's much more investment. But there just seems to be an urgency to get all these tools and IPs, you know, under one roof. I mean, you know, now that you IPO'd, I mean, are you looking for inorganic growth and organic growth? You know, what's the future for AlphaWave?
So, you know, our goal is consistent. It's to grow to be a double-digit billion market cap company, a leader in our industry. And so that the IPO has enabled us to be able to now have capital that we can begin to deploy. I'm a big believer in organic, frankly. I don't think you can buy yourself success. You have to build your own success. So obviously, a major use of proceeds is to organically expand on our product offerings. And you know, the best investment for me has and always will be people, right? So in adding more people that can help us bring more products to the market, whether it's silicon IP, whether it's product IP or chiplet IP that we offer today, And you know, sometimes we add people organically. Sometimes we're able to bring on teams, and we've just successfully brought on one team in Canada that immediately adds additional capability to bring more products to the market. And these are the types of things that we'll continue to look to do in regions that make sense, whether it's in UK, which is where we're listed, whether it's in Canada, whether it's in the US, whether it's in some of the other geos where we're currently located, such as Mexico or India. And so the major use of proceeds is to invest in what delivers us the most value, which is predominantly people, highly skilled engineers that want to solve the world's most difficult problems and the world's most advanced technologies. It's not easy. There's a reason why people call it the bleeding edge, but you know, it's also highly rewarding professionally, academically, and also financially. The market and the community appreciate the value when you're delivering this type of high technology.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned teams. Some of the IP acquisitions that I've observed recently is more team focused rather than product focused. So in the IP business, that's not uncommon. So I think that's a great strategy. You know, one final thing, Tony, you mentioned chiplets. That's a real big topic. Everybody's talking about it, but not everybody is doing it. You know, what is your view of chiplets? You know, what is there a big future for chiplets? You know, are they really going to be able to be implemented on a large scale?
So there was a recent Lindley Group paper that talked about the cost benefits of chiplets. And what it showed was on 5 nanometer, if you're building a SoC anywhere on the order of 2/3 of a maximum reticle size or larger, the total cost benefits of bringing that product to market in a chiplet format versus a monolithic format delivered at least 30% improvement in terms of reduction in cost. You know, that 30% directly translates to gross margin benefits. And with those types of benefits at 5 nanometer, will only scale as you go to 4 nanometer, 3 nanometer, and beyond. So I think the move to chiplets on large semiconductors is inevitable. I fully agree with you. Up to now, it's only been a handful of semi companies that have been able to successfully deploy products. It's Intel, AMD, NVIDIA, right? Those are the three big players that have done it to date. So I think there's tribal knowledge within these very large, high market cap semi companies that have figured it out. There's not a broad range of EDA tools for chiplet based designs. There's not a broad range of strong industry standards driving chiplet-based designs. And that lack of standardization and turnkey design approach and turnkey IPs, I think has stymied this transition to chiplets. It's confusing. Product engineers, architects have all been trained via monolithic. And so it's a massive jump into the unknown, moving into chiplets. And unless you're one of those select few, I think the fear of the unknowns is holding the industry back. So what I believe the industry needs, and I've been on panels, a couple panels over the last year, and my view has been consistent. What we need as an industry is to create a similar turnkey approach to be able to bring chiplets to the masses. That means EDA tools that allow architectures to be split across chiplets, timing to be run across chiplets, interfaces to be easily automated and architected in to enable this dissection of logic. The ecosystem and the cost estimates of building chiplet-based products and the cost value needs to become broadly known, so it's easy to understand and quantify the benefits. And then standardization around interfaces, around approaches for connecting these technologies up. And it extends not only within silicon providers, but even substrate providers and packaging providers. And until all of these pieces stay in place, I think it will remain to a select few. But inevitably, whether it's 1 year from now or 3 years from now, I'm convinced the economics driving towards chiplets will be unstoppable. It is the future. To me, the only question is when will it be? A year from now or a couple of years beyond?
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, you know, it's all about the economics and it's all about enabling design starts. And, you know, chiplets can speed your chip up quite a bit, you know, and hopefully, you know, there'll be many more design starts as a result. So, yeah, it's coming. It's just the question is when, and hopefully it's sooner than later.
And anyway, certainly at AlphaWave, we're going to try to make it sooner. Okay,
that's good to hear.
That's our goal. That's our commitment. So I'd love to come back here next year and you grade me in terms of our ability to deliver to that commitment.
That's an agreement. We will do that. So this is a good place to stop. Thank you so much, Tony, for your time. And thanks, everybody, for listening and participating in the Semiconductor Insiders podcast. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you, Daniel. Wonderful being here.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.